If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
And hello, it is John Pollock and waiting, coming at you after Saturday night's main event. Hello, Way.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing well.
All right. Good.
Did you come into this room? Did you climb over the fence, or did you walk through the door into your office?
Explain the joke.
Because Jesse Ventura would be very disappointed if you walked through the door.
Yes, well, yes, I guess so. Yeah,
like some coward.
Yeah,
well,
like
Wade,
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How was tonight's show?
Easy watch. Honestly, it's probably the easiest main roster WWE program to watch. Like, it's the shortest content time, and I would almost say you're gonna hate me for this.
It's too short.
Well, it's not too short. It's just like there's so many commercials that interrupt everything. Yes. That I never feel like I'm getting a full glimpse of, like, the matches. You know, I'm hearing these crowds, they're chanting, "This is awesome." And I'm like, it is. Because I feel like I'm barely watching these matches before they go to commercial break. So
there's
not really getting
commercial
a full
inventory. And I think three shows into this iteration of Saturday night's main event, there's a very different pacing to these matches where it is like they're getting into, like, the big stuff almost immediately. Like, we're getting, like, and part of that is these matches are shorter, perhaps by design. I will say, like, watching this just for the pacing and how they were racing to get in the big angle at the end of the show, I didn't think this women's match needed to be added at all to this show for an extra 5-minute match with entrances and everything. That I think every one of these matches, save
but
for,
then you'd have people complaining that there was no women's match. I mean, there could be a reason why they decided to include it.
Well, then take something else out. Like, if that's how every show has to be structured, then I don't care, but pick whatever 4 matches you need. But I think outside of Cena and Truth, every match on this show could have used extra time. And more importantly, I think you could have had that closing angle breathe a bit more, because that was, like, the big thing on the whole show was Cody's return.
Yeah, you can tell from the beginning of these shows how much of a stressful task it must be to keep everything on time, because this show is really so incredibly tight. There really is very little room for flex, you know, whether it be in the content of the in-ring stuff at all, or just everything else, you know, to do with it. So it's a bit of a frantic pace, honestly, but it's also a lot of commercial breaks if you're choosing to watch live, which I did not choose to watch live.
Well, that's probably a smart option, because there's, like, you could, how late did you start this show?
So I started about, I want to say, like, 15 minutes past, which, like, doesn't sound like a whole lot, but, like, I'm also, like, pausing in between to, like, you know, do stuff. So by the end,
Okay, because I didn't start this till, like, 8:30, and dude,
I
was caught up, like, in no time. Like, it's not the hardest show to, you could go a lot later than that if you had to.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to get right into things. Night number one at the Yuengling Center in Tampa, Florida, for Saturday night's main event, their return to NBC. And This was supposed to be their first of four nights at the arena. They are running Battleground on Sunday, Raw Monday, but NXT on Tuesday getting the axe, and they are moving back to the Performance Center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Low ticket sales.
Right. This one, WrestleTix announcing 9,761, and this looked pretty full for this venue. Mm-hmm. To compare, like when the last update we had for Tuesday's NXT was 1,700. So,
yeah,
I don't know what the walk up was going to be, but it wasn't going to be 8,000 tickets, would be my assumption. Mm-hmm. Joe Tessitore is our host, and he welcomed us to Saturday night's main event presented by Dude Wipes, best clean, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Clever, right?
Yeah, really, really. It is.
Are they like I don't want to talk about the product actually. No, it's okay.
Dude Wipes or the WWE product?
No, about Dude Wipes.
I mean Dude Wipes have been a long-time UFC sponsor. So MMA fans have gotten every last joke out of Dude Wipes. So now the pro wrestling audience, this is virgin territory.
Right, yeah. I guess I'm just curious, like, you can flush these? I have to think so, right? I thought you weren't supposed to flush like wet wipes.
Have you ever seen these out in the wild in your shopping?
Dude Wipes?
I've never seen Dude Wipes in my life.
No, I don't know if they have those in Canada.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I deal with like wet wipes all the time for like, you know, babies, right? And yeah. And you can't flush those.
No, they're very, very bad for your plumbing too.
They're terrible for the environment, right? But I guess these are very specific.
Let us know in the chat if we have any Dude Wipes experiences out there that people want to share.
I don't care. No.
Please. Okay. Tessitore is with Jesse Ventura, and he is decked out in his old Malcolm X hat that he would wear on occasion back in his WCW days, and a Jimi Hendrix shirt. So, quite the stylistic choices here by Jesse Ventura. Also noting that Joe Tessitore, he does not drink coffee, and Ventura will be on
this
call.
This is after Tessitore suggested that they had coffee earlier in the morning.
Yeah, so I guess Tessitore was just full of it.
Or
just
he's
made
denying.
Up a story here. I bet they didn't even have breakfast together.
Maybe.
Ventura's going to call the steel cage match, and boy, would he turn in a steel cage call later on. Cole and McAfee are on commentary itself, where McAfee notes having history here back when this was the Thunderdome and he had his debut match for WWE inside of this arena at the Yuengling Center.
All right.
They should have brought back just for one night only. Could we have done a throwback Thunderdome night here at the Yuengling Center where we get all the screens up and
fake noise
and yeah. People can put up their images of God, what were some of the
like the one that we probably shouldn't talk about.
there were a lot of things that got through the screening process as we recall back in the Thunderdome days.
Yeah, including a Chris Benoit photo.
Yeah, and there was worse than that got on there as well back in the Thunderdome days. We're kicking off with Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker against CM Punk and Sami Zayn. Massive pop, especially for CM Punk coming out. And it was a kind of visual representation here. We had both Sami Zayn and CM Punk's tights and trunks in the colors of the Palestinian flag, mm-hmm. with Zayn also having the three stars on the front from the Syrian flag as well. So that was very, very noteworthy as well.
Noteworthy because, I mean, as far as I guess we've ever seen on television, like, this is probably the closest I would imagine the WWE would get to referencing the issue. You know, Punk and Zayn themselves have been outspoken on their own personal social media about the story.
They also note that Punk's last match on Saturday night's main event was in August of 2007. CM Punk and the Boogeyman against Big Daddy V and John Morrison.
All right.
So what a throwback that we have.
That sounds, I'm sorry, awful. Okay.
They had to follow Evander Holyfield and Matt Hardy on that Saturday night's main event.
Okay. That sounds awful.
Do Do you know what the next Saturday night's main event was after that show in 2007?
Tell me.
There wasn't one. NBC was done after that. Ooh. Yeah, they got their fill after Big Daddy V. Mm. So this is my perfect example. Like, they are just getting right into things here. Before the bell even rings, Punk and Zayn send them to the floor. Braun and Rollins get the heat on Sammy, and Braun hits the flying clothesline onto the desk for our first of like 50,000 commercial breaks on this show. Come back, and Punk gets the hot tag, and dude, Punk hits a code red onto onto Rollins for a two count. Then he comes off the top. This guy hits a code red, and then he hit an elbow drop that looked like this man was like jumping off a ship to safety for his this was the most uncoordinated elbow drop off the top that you can imagine after this guy delivered like a pretty good looking code red. He signals for the GTS, but Braun saves Rollins, pulling him off the shoulders, and Punk eats a pedigree for a two count. So we're just getting into this flow of near falls, because that's when the audience knows this is awesome, when there's a near fall. Punk and Rollins are down, and Zayn gets in. He hits a tornado DDT to Braun, exploder into the corner, and he sets up for the Huluva kick when Paul Heyman grabs him by the foot, preventing the move. And then there in the background, we see Bronson Reed hop the barricade, and with Punk staggering on the floor, he is bulldozed into the timekeeper's area by Big Bronson. Zayn is distracted by all of this, turns around, spear by Breaker, and Braun pins Zayn in 13 minutes and 15 seconds. It's Bronson's return after breaking his foot in a terrible fashion at War Games last November, and he appears to be the newest member of Paul Heyman's alliance here. They did note the history between Braun and Bronson. So
oh man, that's gonna be
gonna be a bit of a tongue tire.
Hello, Reed. His new name,
Reed. They're just gonna get rid of the first name.
Oh man.
But this was so weird, because Braun and Bronson are staring at each other like they're about to go at it, when Rollins steps forward, embraces Reed like this was my plan. Like, this was carbon copy of how they just did Solo Sikoa, Jeff Cobb, and Jacob Fatu. Right. Like, the idea of, like, these two are at odds with one another, but Solo Sikoa and Seth Rollins are the masterminds that have brought this person in. But you don't have any tension here with Breaker and Reed, because they embrace after Rollins gives him the okay. And then Punk gets one last dive in at Paul Heyman, so they beat the hell out of him, and they hold down Punk for a tsunami. And lots of different directions that can come out of this, one of which you would imagine in the immediate future is Bronson Reed and CM Punk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, you know, and just in talking about the pace of the wrestling, again, it's a very different formula from any of the other TV wrestling we seem to see. They're trying to fit these, like, what feel like pay-per-view
level. This is like
level.
Video game style. Like, for everyone that wants to talk about, like, the you've got to slow it down and all that, like, that all goes out the window that we've seen on these Saturday Night's Main Event ones. Like, it's just big move, near fall, near fall, near fall, and the crowd responds to it.
And it's because these shows have to have story-driven, like, relatively, like, I don't want to say super high stakes, but, like, higher than usual level stakes attached to these matches, but with far less TV time than certainly a pay-per-view would allow it, and I would even suggest the Raw or SmackDown would allow. So they're having to cram a lot into a very short amount of time. And by the end, I just kind of feel like I'm watching a highlight of a match rather than like the actual match itself. So I almost feel weird, like really judging or critiquing like my overall enjoyment of the match, because I feel like I barely got to see like the whole thing.
It's right? Like a YouTube highlight video, because in this, we had two commercial breaks in a 13 minute match.
Okay. Bell to bell was 13 minutes,
13 minutes and 15 seconds.
It just felt way quicker than that. And I don't know if that was just because of the pace they were going at, but like with the two commercial breaks, I'm assuming.
Well, wait, you watched about like 7.5 to 8 minutes of this.
Right. So it's just a very different feeling from like any of the other WWE content I usually watch. But I would say like for these shows, I'm looking more for like significant storyline development anyway, something to launch us into the next chapter of these feuds. I thought we would get that with whatever would happen between Zayn and Punk. They were perfectly cohesive, so cohesive in fact that they even bonded together and coordinated their politically motivated wardrobe together for this particular tag team. It suggests to me that whatever's going on between Punk and Zayn is going to be prolonged and explored perhaps, you know, further down the line, which is totally cool with me. But the big storyline beat we had today was Bronson Reed, and I thought there'd be a strong chance that Reed would be inserted into Solo's bloodline because that's where we last saw him. I like him a lot better as part of Rollins' stable here because it's he stands out more, certainly. You know, he's a very similar archetype to a Jeff Cobb or a Jacob Fatu. So in this case, he kind of has all that spotlight all to himself. Being like another heavy with Braun together is interesting because I thought that they would opt for a more, again, Randy Orton style of like person. But now it feels like Rollins is just surrounding himself with monsters, which also creates, I think, a good dynamic to continue to bolster his status on the show.
So I thought for what you got to see, like I thought it was a pretty entertaining tag, and you did get the big, you know, plot point with Bronson Reed coming in. So I thought overall, like this was a strong part of the show. Kathy Kelly interviews the Secret Hervis as Green is ready for her second term as champion. She's also about to lose her voice. So yeah, on a show like this, let's make sure we get the person that's like battling laryngitis to cut a promo on top of it.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's Zelina Vega, Chelsea Green for the women's U.S. title. Vega lands a spinning elbow, and then they go to like the side of the ring like shot, and you can see this tilt-a-whirl head scissors by Vega that she did not get all of here. And Green then takes Vega off the edge and power bombs her onto the floor. I thought Zelina Vega was dead after this power bomb. She is rolled into the ring and kicks out at two, but this power bomb, oh my God, did this look like she threw everything into this power bomb, and Vega just looked like she bounces her head off the floor.
A much bigger spot than I was expecting from these two. Yeah.
There was a sign, Make America Green Again. Did you know that Governor Ron DeSantis was also there and got booed significantly? He was not I don't think he was ever shown on the broadcast, but he was there.
Yeah, listen, I don't know how I feel about Make America Green Again as a potential catchphrase for them, because on the one hand I'm appalled by it. I also kind of think it's, I also kind of like it a lot as something that perfectly fits this Chelsea Green thing. But I mean, clearly they did not choose to go there.
No, this was a fan sign, by the way, but yes. Yeah. So Vega gets out of the way of a splash. Green tries for the unprettier, and it's stopped with a backstabber. And then Vega goes for a 619. But what? She got a busy signal because this was the roughest looking 619, where she gets caught up. And then she just blasts Chelsea on a second try at the kick of the 619. And this looks to be the spot where Green's nose gets busted open because she's all bloody from this. Niven knocks Vega off balance on the turnbuckle as Elba distracts the ref. So Green climbs up, is hit with a headbutt, and Vega hits the code red and wins in 5 minutes and 9 seconds as Green comes up. And here you see her bloody nose. Dude, this was not a good match.
No, it was not. So interestingly, after all we said about the last match being so frantic with so many commercial breaks, this match had no commercial breaks.
This was commercial free, and we got to see everything.
Yeah, and I don't know if that worked to their advantage at all, because like for that reason, you got like the sort of slow down chin lock rest spot, which did not help, I think, the quality of this match at all on TV. They still worked a faster pace than usual, and but yeah, overall, I thought it was disappointing, especially because we're all going to mostly remember that botch 619. It's too bad. And I would even say before that, I don't know how much the crowd was necessarily engaging in just Zelina Vega as a compelling babyface. I think the problem remains, especially with this pairing, that Chelsea is still too entertaining to be a viable heel against a baby face that really has not gotten over, you know, in Zelina Vega. I think it's hurting already Zelina Vega, who I think is continued to struggle to really get out of the gates as like a significant act on the show. You know, the only character thing she has is that she's short, And it's just, that's just not enough, you know? And I think there's a lot more talent in there than just She's Short. So it's, she's trying. I'm sure she's probably beating herself up right now over that botch. But I think the character needs a bit more support than just, you know, letting her wrestle, because she's okay as a wrestler. She's not Neo Sky, who can do that. So I hope she gets that. And I also wonder if Chelsea now completely moves on from this US gimmick thing now that she's failed again.
Yeah, it's interesting because even Cole brought it up here that she did an interview with like CBS News or something, and she was very emotional about finally winning this championship. And it sounds like this whole title reign, it's all of these things that she's doing outside of the ring that seem to be the most impactful, but we never see any of it on television. Like when she went to her father's grave with the title and did that, like you never saw that on TV. It's like there is all this stuff that Zelina
was it? What is it? Was it his grave or the 9/11 memorial?
It might have been the 9/11 memorial, right, when they were in New York. But yeah, the same idea is like, that's the kind of stuff that is going to give her, I think, some more substance on the program. And this stuff is happening, but you're only seeing like her inside like this WWE world, and it's like not standing out in a big way. And I thought, other than this is a rematch of who she won the title from, it just felt very thrown together the night before to just fit on this show. And I just felt like it was not like there was no lead up to this other than throwing a fifth match on the card, which the show did not need, in my opinion.
It allowed them to feature Zelina, you know, if they are going to be a bit more serious with her. And of course, notable that Julia pinned her last night on SmackDown. So I have to think that would be the direction. I would even suggest that Julia is probably going to be the one to beat her for the belt.
The legends were out tonight. We had Jimmy Hart and Bushwhacker Luke.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. I mean, it's
it's nice to see them. Yes.
We might as well just go. They also showed Leilani Kai, Tatanka, and then Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda in their U.S. Express jackets.
Mm-hmm.
And this coming the day after both the Wyatt Six return and what would have been Bray Wyatt's 38th birthday as well yesterday.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
So the show rolls on after that match, and we go to the announcement for El Hijo del Vikingo against Chad Gable being added to Worlds Collide. So we now have two matches for the show on June 7th, which is airing on YouTube, they have announced. And then Vikingo. Did you expect that we would see this year El Hijo del Vikingo on an NBC broadcast?
I guess not. No, yes. I would have said unlikely for that one.
Yeah. I wish we had Vikingo with Bushwhacker Luke, so he could have got licked here.
They are in the same universe now. Yes.
They missed that. They missed that one. It number one, I think it would be a fun gag if they have Adam Pearce inform Gable that El Grande Americano is going to face Penta on this show, and you have Gable freaking out.
Like,
why is that a big deal? You can both wrestle on June 7th. I think there's a very good chance we're going to get Gable doing double duty at this Worlds Collide show.
Yeah, I think that would absolutely be it. I mean, the other program they've been building up strongly that I think we can assume will be on this show is Penta versus El Grande Americano / Chad Gable. So I would have to think both would make their way here. The other notable thing, of course, and thank you, John Cena, in our private chat for informing me of this, is that Vikingo is scheduled to face Alberto Del Rio for the AAA Mega Championship on the 31st, which I think many will be presuming might be a title change to get the belt off of Del Rio, which would make this match against Chad Gable potentially for the championship.
And then they announced their weekend in Atlanta coming up July 12th and 13th, which will feature three shows. Thankfully, they picked a very quiet weekend where we will have NXT's Great American Bash, Saturday night's main event on the Saturday, and then Evolution confirmed for the Sunday night, all taking place at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta. They did not announce the time or date, for that matter, for Great American Bash, but I think everyone is assuming this will be a Saturday afternoon show that, surprise, surprise, would go head-to-head with All In Texas.
What time does All In start? Do you know?
3, I think.
So Eastern?
Yes.
Eastern?
Okay. 2 o'clock Eastern? It might be 2 o'clock Eastern. I'd have to double check, but it's
interesting.
Yeah,
that time. And can't we assume that there's at least a chance that it'll at least go till, what, 8 o'clock in the evening?
Oh, like, it'll be
Saturday night's main event starts, right?
I think it would be over by then. I don't think it would go that long, but even at 3 o'clock is... it's 1 o'clock Central, so 2 Eastern would be...
2 Eastern. All right. That will be a very interesting day. So, yeah.
But I mean, this is the play. Like, this is the NXT's role. It is being thrown out there. I see a Great American Bash being very similar to this Battleground, where it's going against it. I look at tomorrow night's show. I think Game 3 of the Knicks and Pacers is just a way bigger factor than an NXT show going up against Double or Nothing. But does it affect some of the audience? Maybe.
Yeah, I would say maybe. You know, going up against the biggest show of AEW's calendar year, I think if you're an active AEW viewer anyway, you're probably going to just choose that over anything else. If you're on the fence about it, maybe you would choose this potentially double header of NXT and Saturday night's main event. I'm curious to see if they would stack Saturday night's main event any greater than usual. If they might feel like this might be an active sort of competition, sort of battlefield against AEW, the fact that it's in Atlanta, how likely do you think we will, it may be that we may get a Goldberg either match or significant anything?
Well, that I think is, you know, when you had Goldberg do that interview this week about the match taking place down south and where he has a history with, I think everyone's looking at Goldberg and Gunther being on the Saturday night's main event card. It's also worth noting they are promoting this for 7:30 Eastern on, I guess that might be
The live
attendance. That might be the doors for live. So it would probably still be an 8 o'clock start on NBC that night. Yeah. But I think everyone is looking now at Goldberg's retirement being this July 12th show. I don't know how much of a factor that plays. I think it's to AEW's benefit that they are running first in the afternoon as opposed to if this were first, for instance, and maybe people watch the Saturday night's main event, they get their wrestling fill and don't want to order a pay-per-view that night. But listen, they want to own this day on July the 12th. And I think it's more interesting what they do for the Great American Bash card. Like tomorrow night's Battleground show, it's not like it's some jacked card that NXT has put together. Like it's a pretty straightforward NXT caliber show that it's not like they're throwing main roster people on that to combat it.
No. Because I mean, they would lose. This is again to them. It might just be a matter of convenience because there are only so many days. But it's also something that I'm sure they're just putting in there to take some of the attention away from AEW. Any thoughts on Evolution in the official announcement of that?
No, I'm interested. Like Atlanta is a really great market for WWE, and I think like this will. I think this weekend will do pretty well for them in Atlanta, but we are talking about you know, a show built around all of the women, where I would say overall WWE as a brand is way stronger than it was in 2018. But I still maintain, I don't think any one of the women is the level of star Ronda Rousey was in 2018. But you are talking about star power that is spread out among at least your top women. I think the show is going to do well at the State Farm Arena. Can they? Do you believe they can sell out two nights in a row at State Farm Arena, which is, you know, you're looking at, I want to say like 12,000 or so people. Like it's a big arena to fill.
When we think about the top names in the company, you know, who are women, we're talking who Rhea Ripley, Becky, Charlotte. We can assume we'll all be on the show. Belair, maybe. I'm assuming every woman who's an active wrestler will be on the show. And is that enough to draw the house that, you know, we maybe a Saturday night's main event would? We have such little data about this sort of thing that I can't confidently say yes. You know, I can say that, yeah, they're huge stars. Look at the amount of reaction that they get. I can't confidently say that they'll fill.
It's the concept that's going to be the initial sell for this. I don't even know if like there's necessarily those like names from the past that are going to be
cool.
Like they've gone, they brought
even Ronda coming back isn't that big of a deal anymore. You know, like I could see maybe a Nikki Bella. Is that really adding all that much? You know, like call up Trish. I suppose, you know, but beyond that, what is the sort of like extra thing that might possibly guarantee that this would be a potential sellout?
I mean, I just think it's the women having a show to their own. That's going to be the sell for a lot of people. And I don't know, like, it's not a guarantee, like, this is going to sell out two nights in a row. Like, the Saturday night's main event, does that hurt it if you know, sell this place out for Goldberg's retirement the night before and then you're coming back the next night? I mean, maybe it will. I do think the concept is strong. It's been long enough. Mm-hmm. But, let's remember that
the roster is strong.
The roster is strong. Like, I'm glad they're doing it, but let's remember, like, in 2018, it's not like they brought that back the next year as a pay-per-view or anything like that. So I think that tells you, at least internally, like, they did not feel they could come back with that in any of these subsequent years. Mm-hmm. But so that will be an absolutely insane weekend with those shows happening. And at least it's long enough in the future that we don't have to think about it right now. John Cena against R-Truth, non-title match. Cena comes out, and then he is followed. His music plays a second time as Ron Cena comes out. And I will say, Truth, I thought was excellent during this entrance. Like, he had every mannerism down, and
this shirt is hilarious.
Yeah, like, maybe it's just my level of Best of the Super Juniors that I'm watching. Like, this was just your Taguchi match, basically, of R-Truth playing Taguchi without seeing his bare ass either. So we weren't going to see that on NBC.
Thank goodness for that. Yeah,
Cena just runs him over at the beginning before the bell even rings, and we get right into it. R-Truth loses his earrings, and then we get a chant of "You can't wrestle, yes he can," and it was the start of a few pro Cena chants that we had. I mean, this one more mixed, but Truth ends up slipping off of the shoulders and does Cena's own comeback, hits a five-knuckle shuffle on Cena, and then hits an AA, and they were able to get one near fall in here for R-Truth that I don't think anyone thought he was actually pinning Cena, but they acted like they did. So Cena kicks out. The STF is applied. Cena's right at the rope, and Cena goes, and he grabs the belt, and he's about to hit him with a belt shot, but he stops, and he has a pause and a crisis in conscience here, and he ends up looking at the crowd, and he hands the belt over to the referee. Has he seen the light? And as the referee goes to place the belt on the floor, kicks R-Truth right in the balls and hits him with the AA to win in 4 minutes and 24 seconds. And then Cena grabs the belt, nails Truth with the belt, and then the crowd starts chanting, "Thank you, Cena," as they quickly start the Saturday night's main event music to kind of just drown it out here. I found this to be and we'll talk about another one later in the show, but like, there were several instances on this show of the audience that was not exactly just going along with what the story or character direction is. And I think with Cena, I think it'll be very interesting to see, like, these audiences that I think are kind of past the novelty of this guy turning heel. And I think it is going to be a bit of a struggle now for Cena. Like, I just don't, I think everyone has kind of gotten this out of their system of seeing Cena as a heel. And now it's the farewell tour to this audience. And I don't think this Tampa crowd is just an anomaly, but we are getting more of these pro Cena ones, even against an R-Truth here that seemed like a pretty easy babyface to put up against heel Cena for the reaction you would have wanted.
Sure. And I think maybe I might speak for you in saying that, like, personal, I don't think tonight was a failure at all, despite like the pro Cena chance, despite like the thank you Cena chance. What might become a failure is if when Cena faces off against Cody Rhodes again, and an audience might prefer a John Cena to a Cody Rhodes if they face off again, or another babyface who might not be as strong. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's inherently bad that fans, you know, are chanting yes he can, or like thank you Cena at the end of it. You know, in the end, the big thing we should be asking is, does John Cena still feel like a big deal? Does this Cena run still feel like an attraction for people to, you know, tune in or coming through the door? And I would still say very much yes at this point in time. Getting back to the match itself, I mean, for like, what was this, how long was this, like a five
this
minute
was four
thing?
And a half minutes
for a 5 minute, like 4.5 minute match. I mean, I was very sports entertained personally. They gave us some comedy here with R-Truth's entrance, his five moves of doom, countering Cena's five moves of doom, great reactions to all of that. And then like, just like a little attempt at creating a little bit of drama with that dramatic pause ending with the low blow from Cena. Like, all in all, this to me felt almost like a, having read a lot of these recently, felt like a little children's book where like, you know, you have like 10 pages to tell a beginning, middle and end. And that was that, you know. I don't know if this was supposed to be anything more than that. You know, in the end, they wanted Cena on Saturday night's main event, and they wanted to spend zero TV dates to build up to it. So they used the press conference, got him here, got him on the poster, and got him in the angle, and that was that. And
the climax of this legendary press conference angle.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not that invested in like seeing this as like any sort of like significant moment, you know, just as a way to get him on the card. I thought it was like fun, decently executed.
Yeah, I mean, this will be one where, again, you do have the playoffs you're contending with, but I would say like if this is like the last two Saturday nights and main events were like 1.5, 1.4 million. Like, if they can even maintain that, I think Cena would be a reason for that. You know, it's not like this was a big marquee match for John Cena, but it was still Cena wrestling on free television. Did that matter? We'll find out on, you know, on Tuesday when we get this performance. So Cena just takes off and leaves, and then we come back. Jey Uso is getting ready for his match, and he runs into Cena and reminds Cena that he threw him out of the Royal Rumble. And Cena then wonders out loud what would happen if my clock hit zero and I left with the championship and that world title that you're holding was on a YouTuber if he lost to Logan Paul. That could ruin wrestling. And Cena says that he will be watching closely. So, I mean, certainly indicating here that Cena would be somehow involved in this main event and was probably smart to do this rather than just think that Cena's segment was over and you wouldn't see him again. This was certainly tying in a potential comeback later in the night for some kind of angle.
Yeah, like in previewing these matches, I think we were expecting Cena's next opponent to be announced via the R-Truth match in what I think we might have suggested to be like a more vicious, violent beatdown angle. Nothing really resulted from the end of the R-Truth match. Instead, we would find out Cena's next opponent in the Jey Uso match that was to come. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Jesse Ventura was going to be on commentary for the cage match. So first, we show highlights of Ventura wrestling on the January 4th, 1986 edition of Saturday Night's Main Event in this same arena back when it was the USF Sundome in Tampa, where it was Ventura, Cowboy Bob, and Roddy Piper beating Hillbilly Jim, Uncle Elmer, and Cousin Luke. That sounds as attractive as the Boogeyman match. And Ventura was so proud of the fact that he wrestled and did commentary on the same show and blames Pat McAfee for trying to copy that. But the difference is I won and you lost. And then Jesse Ventura, who Chris Charlton, Jesse Ventura was not on this night, pointed out his first of many stats, stating Pat was the second broadcaster to ever climb into the ring. And Michael Cole just lets it sit for a minute and then notes, you know, I am undefeated at WrestleMania. This was breaking news to Jesse Ventura, who said, who did you wrestle? Like, this was absolutely
another commentator
news.
Who stepped into the ring, I guess.
Yes. And then
it's clear the man has never seen a second of pro wrestling other than the few times he might have jumped into a WWE.
I will give this man great leeway that he is not up to date on a ton of modern pro wrestling. But then I would imagine this guy to at least have a scant memory. He says, as Drew is walking down, first of all, he says, why would Drew want a steel cage match? And Michael Cole's like, well, he's undefeated in steel cage matches. But he says, you know, back in the 80s, NBC wouldn't have allowed a steel cage match to take place. Oh, it shows you how times have changed. I was like, Jesse, you were literally on the call for some of the biggest cage matches that aired on Saturday night's main event. Hogan and Orndorff, Hogan and Boss Man. I mean, I do expect Jesse to at least have his 80s memory intact, but this was, dude, Jesse was a trip on this show. And this was maybe Jesse's, in terms of, the points he was bringing out, the worst. But he's so out there that I was greatly entertained by this guy because he was just, the opposite of any kind of, factual authority here. He was just, throwing stuff out. And it's like, if it landed, it landed. But, I mean, needed a fact checker at the end of all of this.
Do you think he adds much to Saturday night's main event?
Not on show three. I really enjoyed him on the first one, even the second. I would say they didn't even promote him for this third one. So I mean, granted, it's four times a year. It's basically calling one match. I don't think he's necessarily overstaying his welcome, but I didn't feel like he added a whole lot here. If anything, he really took away a lot of attention, especially here at the ending of this match that,
right.
I mean, some people are going to find it in fun because it's Jesse playing this shtick, mm-hmm. but it really did kind of diminish the whole ending of this match.
Yeah. In terms of maybe trying to attract a wider net, you know, with a Jesse Ventura, I don't think that has any value at all. In 2025, I don't know what Jesse Ventura really brings.
We had two governors in the house between Jesse and Ron DeSantis. I mean,
we do have that stat.
Oh, I'm the only governor that's willing to show up at a Saturday night's main event.
Yes. I guess in terms of the sort of packaging of Saturday night's main event as a nostalgia based thing, I think Jesse adds some connection to it as in a way that having Obsession adds also a similar level of connection. But I don't know if I even like him being on the call anymore, you know, especially when it's very clear that he hasn't watched wrestling in 30 years.
The nostalgia as well, it's going to, it's one thing when you do one night stand, but if ECW did four pay-per-views in 2005, that would wear thin too. It's December, they cranked up the nostalgia, and I thought it was a great mix that mm-hmm. they had of the modern stuff with the classic nostalgia that you had, Jesse included. He's going to be on these shows. I didn't feel he was
paying him for it, so yeah.
So we get the cage match with Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre. Drew attacks Priest before the door gets shut, and he brings a chair into the ring. And they kind of missed this early, but Priest went for his own version of Claymore before hitting South of Heaven, and then they would do a role reversal later where Drew would hit the South of Heaven, so they actually both did each other's moves. And then the crowd starts doing their song for Drew McIntyre, and they're getting behind him. It only lasted sparingly, but Drew's head gets placed against a chair in the corner, which is the way Drew did the attack at WrestleMania. This time, Priest gets out of the way, and this is where Priest takes the chair and drives Drew's throat into the chair. Priest gets a pair of chairs and does a concerto. As they note, that's how he eliminated his mentor who invented the move. And I couldn't put my name, put my finger on it. I was like right on the edge of like trying to piece it together, but couldn't quite deduce who he was referring to here. This is where he's talking about Edge. Edge, he's on AEW, right? I think he's fine. Drew is dead from the concerto, and Priest goes to walk out the door, pauses on the final step, takes one last look at Drew, and stands on the floor to win in 12:22. But the question everyone had, did he really win? Ventura, what BS? You can just walk out the door and win? And you think he's just going to let it go? What a coward. He at least could have climbed over the top of the cage. Give me a break. Is his limo driver going to pull up and open the door for him too? And he ends it by asking Pat and Cole, gee, that was exciting, wasn't it? I mean, this guy, I mean, it's kind of the Jesse Ventura charm that you're getting here, but my God, did he just annihilate Damian Priest by the end of this? And what was interesting was the stretcher comes down as Priest had promised that Drew would be taken out. Drew refuses to be taken out on the stretcher. And, you know, I could certainly see like Drew, like this guy to me is performing at such an incredible level. And he's definitely been, I won't say in the background, but he definitely has not been front and center this year. Going into Mania, coming out of Mania, he's been tied with Priest that I don't really want, much like Gunther, I don't want to see this guy turn because I just think he's such a great heel. But unlike Gunther, I just think Drew is hitting that stride where I think the audience was very indicative here in the midst of this match that they could very well get behind Drew because he's been really effective in this role, and a babyface turn was kind of hinted here at the end of it.
I would even say that it was almost deliberate throughout the entirety of the match here. You know, you had Drew McIntyre deliver like very fan friendly moves like that superplex off the cage, and then going into the Claymore countdown, which, I mean, he's done at times as a heel, but in this instance, it felt very deliberate as a way to garner babyface reaction. You had, listen, can we completely rule out like Jesse perhaps like doing something that might have been part of instruction in like, you know, talking down Damian Priest and by, I guess, default, you know, bringing up Drew McIntyre and his nobility in, I guess, not walking out of the cage. But then I definitely also noticed the spotlight given to Drew McIntyre at the end on the broadcast by having him leave on his own feet. So I almost felt like it was deliberate in that they were giving us that. I also even wonder if they're going further and maybe this was a double turn. And I wonder if it was an attempt at trying to sway Damian Priest over maybe more to negative fan reaction so that he might come out of this as a heel. So that might have been the most interesting thing to me coming out of the match. Again, I felt this match kind of suffered from just like us seeing so little of it that went to commercial break that I don't know if I can give a full view of it. But if it was an intentional attempt at the very least, turning a Drew McIntyre, or at least the beginning stages of turning a Drew, maybe even turning Damian Priest as well, especially with that awkward sort of like look back into the ring when the fans were chanting one more time and Priest went on to disappoint them, that might be the sort of most interesting.
He didn't give us more CTE.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're very possible. Like, the funny part was, as you're listening to Ventura, like, it sounded like the kind of promo Drew would have cut coming out of this.
Right.
So I think regardless, though, Drew, like, it was interesting. Like, the way this ended, you thought, like, well, this at least should take Drew out for some time. But by the end of this, you almost got the sense, like, Drew will be, like, coming back from this, and the way he like left on his own power, like I really do feel he coming out of this as a babyface. And yeah, by if the audience is behind Drew, that will precipitate Priest probably turning as well. So
yeah, when you think about it on the SmackDown side of things, what are the big matches for Drew? As a heel, you know, he definitely still had, like, I guess you still have, like, a Cody, you still have, like, a Randy. But Drew Cena is also a big one.
So then now it's time for Jey Uso and Logan Paul. Jey comes through the crowd. He starts yeeting with this kid on the balcony. And Cole mentions that it was 15 years ago today that Jey and Jimmy made their debut in WWE. And the bell rang, and they had, I think it was like 9:50 when the bell rang. And they had to do this match and a pretty significant angle by the end of this.
And they had to fit a commercial break.
And they had to fit in a commercial break. Like, this to me was where it was just like there was too much on this show. Like, for the, like, no match. Like, you want to tell people these Saturday night's main events mean something and you're doing a title match. Like this was just so,
ask you, John, is the aim of this 2-hour block to satisfy in-ring quality standards, or is it to fit as many big faces, names as you can on the show to build two angles for your future product?
I would have been focusing on, like, what is my money angle for Money in the Bank, and mm-hmm. making sure that had all of the, like, this.
So your complaint wasn't so much about, like, the gaps in the wrestling, but that more time should have been given to the post-match.
I just felt, yes, for all that they were trying to accomplish in 10 minutes, it was too much, and they were just racing at the end of this. Like, Jey Uso and Logan Paul, this was not a match I was, like, looking forward to. Like, not that I was, like, dreading this match, but it's not like I was feeling, oh, they were criminally robbed of a classic here or anything like that. But they really had to just go boom, boom, boom here. And yes, as you mentioned, they had the commercial break in here too. Paul hits a rolling fireman's carry and then tries the cabrata. Jey gets the knees up and hits a pop-up Samoan. And the turnbuckle pad gets ripped off by Logan. And then they go to the floor. Jey gets nailed with a right hand as he goes for the dive. And as he's staggered in the ring, Logan flips over the top. And now we have a name. It is the Snapshot Lariat.
Yes.
How lame.
Now, I don't know, like, clearly the name is way too similar to just be like an ad lib from Cole, right? So and Snapshot, I'm assuming, like, what, because he's the guy who takes things on his shots on his phone. Sure, I guess. Sure. Snapshot Lariat. I mean, in a way, it is kind of still paying homage to, like, the person that he's taking the move from. He could have called it something completely different.
I guess not. Yeah.
Snapshot Lariat. Okay.
That's it. Jey, this was almost like, I understand that every match now of this size, we have to do the big near fall spot. And obviously they felt nobody in God's name believed Jey was losing this. So we had Jey get sent into the exposed turnbuckle, then get hit with the titanium right hand that has knocked this guy out, what, 4 times?
Yeah.
And Jey kicks out. It was like
fans didn't really bite at all. I mean, maybe it was because there was
almost too ludicrous here of like Superman kicking out of this. I mean,
it was also like 5 minutes into the match, you know, by this point. So yeah, it's like kind of hard to buy into.
So he kicks out, and then Jey survives this turnbuckle exposure and the titanium right, gets back up and hits a super kick seconds later, goes for the Uso splash and hits it when the referee gets pulled out of the ring by John Cena. And then it's Cena coming in to attack Jey. The ref is unconscious, so he can't DQ anyone here. Cody makes his return and goes after Cena, hits the crossroads, and then Logan Paul has brass knuckles. Cody ducks that, so Jey spears Paul and hits the Uso splash. I thought this match had ended, but it was ongoing this entire time because the referee comes to and counts 3. So Jey gets the pin on Logan, and then literally as the credits are on the screen, Cody says that Cena has ruined enough. You have a partner. I have a brother, as Dustin here on like the anniversary of their I don't need a partner. I need a brother speech says, I've got my brother, Jey Uso, and they'll meet them at Money in the Bank. And boom, we go to our affiliate news, and that was it. As John Cena, who's been advertised for weeks for Money in the Bank, just realized, oh my God, I've got a tag match in 2 weeks with Logan Paul. So, dude, this was we went from the buckshot to the snapshot to the shotgun marriage of John Cena and Logan Paul against Cody and Jey Uso for Money in the Bank.
I can't wait for the episode of WWE Unreal that will document the behind the scenes making of this 2 hours of programming, in particular this final segment, which I'm sure was a nightmare for everybody in Gorilla trying to time all of this in the short amount of time that they had to fit all of this in. But, you know, like,
they went down to the final second here, and the second that he said Money in the Bank, boom, they were off.
Yeah, and Cody, like, really was kind of like, leave it to me. Like, he took the mic like it was the game ball, and he's like, I'll handle this, you know.
That's what his shirt. Did you see what the shirt read with the American Nightmare logo?
Captain. Yes, Captain? There you go. Captain.
Captain!
All in all, though, like, just judging by the crowd reactions, listen, like, there might have been concerns about the match. I don't know why we were concerned about, because they it was a 7 minute, 8 minute, like, match. Like, they were perfectly fine. In fact, they even got, like, strong reactions for it with a John Cena surprise appearance that led to, I think, a pretty hot finish by, like, just simply volume standards. Again, I can't really even comment on the quality of the in-ring so much because, this was so different from a match that you would see on a pay-per-view, for instance. But for TV, I thought it was successful and builds to a big match for Money in the Bank. One that I think had at least been somewhat talked about. The question, of course, as part of some of those reports, was the suggestion that Travis Scott would also be entered into this, turning it into a six-man, potentially with Jimmy on the babyface side of things. What do you think?
Yeah, I just don't see them doing that on this short of a notice. I would say, like, if you were, like, I could see Travis Scott maybe being their card they pull for a SummerSlam, something like that. Like, obviously that's coming. I just think they'll probably just hold off.
What a ridiculous, like, billing that would be. Like, it was ridiculous the first time I heard about it, but John Cena, Logan Paul, and Travis Scott.
Yeah.
In a professional wrestling main event.
Yeah. Providing they keep SummerSlam in Minnesota.
Yes. We could have that moved. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, just final thoughts on Saturday Night's main event. Like, this is a show that I know I'm more of the, focused on, like, the wrestling side at times, but I really do understand, like, the Saturday Night's main events for the format that they are. And it's very just, it's just like a very,
it's trying to present that it's a wrestling show when it's really an angles show.
It's an angle show, and it's almost like it's watching like a highlight reel as opposed to like a prolonged match. It's like they're selling you on the pay-per-view where you get the match. That said, I enjoyed the opening tag. I wouldn't say anything else would even like rate for me wrestling wise on this. Like, there was some fine stuff. The audience seemed engaged, so I think that helped a lot with the atmosphere. But this was more about the two takeaways from this show were the tag match setup and Bronson Reed. Like, that's what you got out of this show. That was the substantive. If you tuned in, you got two significant angles. And I would say anything else you enjoyed was bonus, but I wouldn't say I don't think anyone's going to be sitting down Monday morning if they order Double or Nothing, and they're going to be contrasting the two wrestling shows in terms of a in-ring quality standpoint. They were like, it just feels like night and day what we're comparing here.
I don't even think like this show is actively trying to compete with what that's supposed to be. I don't even think WWE pay-per-views are actively, you know,
well, that's what they're doing in July. That's they are actually actively competing with them.
What this show did provide was a more significant standard of star power than you would typically get on like a television show. If we're strictly comparing like this iteration of Saturday Day Night's main event to like what was in the past, I still prefer this because it feels like you're getting more relevant content. It doesn't feel like these are just like throwaway moments that you don't have to watch. In ring, you could totally discard that. You don't really need to watch these matches at all, but they do provide like significant chapters for their stories, at least for two of the stories that they're telling here.
Yeah. And listen, I'm also not giving a pass. Like, if you were disappointed, like, these are, like, this isn't necessarily like a pay-per-view that they've built up, but they've spent like a cycle of programming. Like, granted, it's 2 weeks since Backlash, but they built this up. And if you were tuning in and you just feel like this was so secondary, like, I think everyone is fair to kind of dismiss that too, of like, you build up these matches and, like, honestly, Cena and R-Truth was delivered as advertised. I wouldn't have changed anything about that. Like, that was what that needed to be. Like, your mileage may vary on the rest of this. The last thing, though, Wei, how did you feel about, like, the actual tag match setup itself? And are you interested in this tag match with mainly seeing Cody and Cena in a ring together again in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it feels big to me, you know. Maybe now most interesting is for me to see the reaction to potentially a babyface reaction for John Cena that I think might continue to I don't know, depending on who you're asking. I think a lot of more people are souring on this heel Cena and maybe will be more likely to cheer for Cody for that reason. No matter what, I think the pairing still feels big, and I also feel like it might spell the direction for SummerSlam with a rematch between the two, right? Is that your feeling as well?
Cody versus Cena?
Yeah. Or do we get that sooner?
I don't see it happening sooner than that. So what we have, Money in the Bank, Night of Champions is the Saudi Arabia card at the end of June.
Yes, and also important to note there, if they're doing the champion versus champion gimmick, that would suggest Cena versus Jay, which we already had a bit of a setup for tonight. It would also suggest Cena going to Riyadh, which I think might be his first time or second. After the first one?
He went to the Greatest Royal Rumble and did not
whatever.
I think he's gone back since. Did he do that Solo Sikoa match in Saudi Arabia? All right.
Brian, please. You're up. Anyway.
But yeah, that's what I took as well. For the Night of Champions. And then we're into SummerSlam. So, I mean, like, you do have your options of where you do this Cena-Cody thing. You have SummerSlam. You know, you've also got, like, a giant baseball stadium for Survivor Series this year as well. Like, you definitely have. You have that big Australia card in October as well. So,
Thank you, Andrew Brown. Solo Sikoa in Saudi versus Cena. So there we go.
All right, let's go to some feedback at forum.postwrestling.com. I will start us off. Dave is in Kansas City. A decent Saturday night's main event. I really like that they're sticking to the retro look with these shows, from the red, white, and blue ring rope colors to the classic referee powder blue shirts with black bow ties. None of the matches were amazing, but I thought most everything worked as far as keeping key storylines moving. Tonight, we got dates for the rumored Evolution event and the next Saturday night's main event. It also looks like we're getting Great American Bash, which I suspect, well, they stated that's an NXT show. Interestingly, though, we didn't get a specific date for the Bash, although by the commercial, it looks like it will happen sometime that weekend. I really hope they don't schedule it at 3 p.m. Eastern at the same special afternoon start time as well. Folks, they are not putting that one early in the morning to make sure that it doesn't run into All In. That would be the exact time slot I would expect it to be at.
I guess the alternative would be Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't
see it. I don't.
Like, why even schedule it that weekend if not to be to set something up head to head with AEW? Like, why even do that if it's just going to be, you know, and to do the State Farm Arena like twice in one day, like, that's insane.
Yeah, let's go to Jeremy in Texas, who says, I thought the show was fine with the addition of Reed to Seth's group. Too heavy seems like a lot for a group, let alone a Braun and a Braun son. Maybe the end goal is Braun turns face, as he seems to be the guy in waiting. I didn't love seeing Drew lose another feud, maybe the main reason being he needs time off to heal. Well, I mean, isn't he 2-1 against Priest?
Yes.
So he kind of still, you know, has already won it, but he did... He did lose the last one.
After that chokeslam spot, I mean, the guy could probably use some time off, to be quite honest. And they at least did do the concerto that, you know, you could conceivably take him out for a second. I certainly don't want to see this guy in a ladder match in 2 weeks either.
Well, he did walk up, though. Like, he did walk up by himself. So, I mean, I don't think we're getting a long-term injury angle for Drew. With Cody back in a tag match at Money in the Bank, at what point do you do the rematch with Cena? Soon as Saudi, or is it held off to SummerSlam or later? Yeah, with the pacing of the shows that we just kind of lined out, I'm sensing SummerSlam for that one. For Saudi, I think you got Cena and Jay.
Could you potentially see them doing the tag on one night at SummerSlam and the singles match, or do you think that they just split?
Are we talking about the Travis Scott tag team?
Yes.
That has to happen
at some point.
Yeah. Well, I don't completely rule out the idea that he would be inserted into this Logan Paul thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they would have to shoot that by Friday because that's
Cena's on the show
appearance.
On Friday.
Yeah.
Cena's on the show. Yeah. Well,
Brian, nice to see Cody return. Even better to see Bronson Reed return from his injury and slotted right into a top act. Beyond the opening tag, I was interested less in the matches and more in announcements for a future event such as Evolution. And Vikingo's match at Worlds Collide and the big tag for Money in the Bank, followed by NBC abruptly ending the show. WWE still have timing issues with network TV shows following a couple issues when NXT first came to CW. Well, I guess you and I, since we're in Canada, we were watching it on YouTube. Listen, that's going to be on WWE's end because, listen, yeah. At 10 o'clock, when you have network affiliate news, they aren't letting you go 30 seconds over to shoot your Money in the Bank angle. So, that's on them to make sure that you're not running up against the clock if they did, in fact, get that cut off. Anyway, I was happy to see Jesse Ventura back, incongruent as ever, with Michael Cole and Pat McAfee.
All right. Seems like a lot of people in the chat love Jesse,
he was super entertaining. I can't say I wasn't having a great time listening to him.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Muggin, who says, a decent newsworthy Saturday night bookended by the returns of Bronson Reed and Cody Rhodes. The tag opener and the cage match were the high points. Bronson returning in a prominent spot under Seth and company is a big deal. I'm pretty stoked that Evolution is returning this summer. I could see a special guest or two stopping by. Masha Slamovich, come on down.
We go to Alexander from Portland. A good show tonight. Seeing a group with Braun and Bronson is funny. I hope their group is given a name sooner than later. I didn't expect much out of Truth and Cena. They probably had the best match either could give. Cena and Jay feuding could generate some hot promos, but I can't imagine the eventual match being a great one. Looking forward to Evolution 2 and Vikingo Gable. What's your favorite WWE match from R-Truth? You're up next.
What's your favorite Three Live Crew match?
Three Live Crew. I could probably come up with some great vignettes that they were part of in promos. Match wise, I mean, they typically did like 3 minute matches, so they knew even back 15 years ago to even longer than that to keep those ones short. I mean, R-Truth is like he's a fine character, and I mean honestly.
I think he's had a hell of a run like these past few years, you know, like he's always been a bit of a comedy character, but now he feels like a very prominent and I would say very respectable in terms of just like the types of reactions he's able to achieve, you know, comedic character. Right. So like good enough to justify a match here against Cena. All right, let's go to finally here, Jurassic Park fan who says, good evening, guys. A decent event with good storyline development, although it's still hard to get used to Saturday night's main event matches being significantly shorter than most big-time matches on WWE. On TV and on PLEs, we get multiple kickouts and not much of that here. Yeah, great to see Cody back, but when he said tag match at Money in the Bank, I'm dreading the Cena versus Cody rematch being in Saudi, since I choose never to watch those shows. To me, it also feels inorganic for Cody not to have challenged Cena for the championship at the next PLE, even though they at least kind of forged some kind of partnership between Logan Paul and Cena. I still kind of consider it a middle finger to US fans if this new Undisputed Championship WrestleMania rematch happens in Saudi. Well, again, like, have we not established that Night of Champions is the place where the two branded champions face each other?
Yeah, they've already stated that.
Hold on a second. Or is that Crown Jewel? Wait, what was the championship that they... Was it the Crown Jewel Championship?
Yes.
So Crown Jewel is where the champions face each other.
Oh, was that for the Australia show?
I don't know. I don't know what the deal is this year. I guess Night of Champions might just be like actual regular matches, right? We're getting our Saudi shows
to the bottom of this.
Yeah. Chat. What does chat room say here? Crown Jewel last year. Crown Jewel 2024. Gunther. Gunther and Cody.
Yeah, we're mistaking it with because it's Saudi. It was
gotcha.
It was Crown Jewel, which they've announced for Australia in October, I believe.
Okay,
so that would be the champion versus champion deal.
Because they call it the Crown Jewel Championship, yes, I guess the champion versus champion match will probably be there.
Yeah.
So I guess that leaves Night of Champions potentially open for a Cody Rhodes, John Cena.
Which is funny, because Cena and Jay actually does make a lot of sense to do at that June show. It gives you the reason to forego Cena and Cody for at least one more month, and you've already set this up where doing a Jay and Cena match actually makes a lot of sense right now, which, you know, there's also like the idea of the title even going back on Gunther at that point and doing something with Jay not even having the title by that point as well. I would think that Cena and Cody is probably more something that you want to hold off for more, because I think when you go to that match, I mean, unless you're going to do like a three match series or something, like it's almost like Cody needs to win the title back. And like, where do you go this early for Cena to lose the belt? Like, I don't think you want to turn him back at the end of June and go another 6 months where he's back in the babyface role. Like, it should be kind of late in the game that Cena's losing this belt, if not right up until the end. Like, that kind of ends the whole drama of, is he going to leave with the belt or not?
Yeah, I agree. But there's always a way out of the match. They can have Cody challenge Cena and somehow fail, you know, maybe not obviously due to himself, and then he'll have to challenge Cena for a third time. By that point, maybe the feud and the chase will have felt longer, and that's when he actually accomplishes it.
You know what the money stipulation is? Cody fails, and the only way... He says, if I don't beat John Cena, I will never challenge for a world championship again in WWE.
Yes, yes.
That
yes.
would be the way to go about all of this.
A couple of questions here. What did you make of commentary framing Damian Priest walking out of the cage being a bigger insult to Drew than pinning him? Didn't land for me, John. Like, I don't... Like, is walking out supposed to be...
That was the whole Bruno like stipulate, like Bruno would like leave, he would walk out, and the idea is like, you know, he's beating him to a pulp and he just like walks out of the cage. It was I would just say, like, I think if they were trying to indicate that like Damian Priest was cowardly for doing that, it's like Cole and Pat McAfee, like they were running cover for Priest during the whole time when Jesse's just on top of this and everything. But
I understand the Jesse role to like just be the antagonizer for entertainment value, but I think it does really confuse the story, especially in that particular moment that was supposed to be a little bit more suggestive.
That was the role though for him. It was take logic and apply it against Hogan or the babyface. It's like he is the advocate for the heels, and in this case for Drew McIntyre, and that's like what he was doing here. But he went so hard on Damian Priest, but I mean, if you're ultimately turning both guys, all's well that ends well. But
One last question here: assuming Seth's faction is a long-term story akin to Batista turning on Triple H leading to Mania 21, who should turn on Seth, Braun or Bronson?
Breaker.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's clear like Breaker is like the golden child, you know, in weight, and Bronson Reed is a good hand, but I don't think they have such high ambitions for him.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for the feedback. We're going to be back in 24 hours' time. Well, probably over 24 hours, because Double or Nothing will still be going on by this time Sunday night.
Our friends at Up Next will probably be here in 24 hours.
That's right, yeah. So WWE and AEW, in their desire to just burn out everybody, we will be doing multiple shows tomorrow night. Wei and I will be covering Double or Nothing. Brayden and Davey will be doing Battleground.
We'll be going head-to-head with our streams. So both live here at youtube.com/postwrestling. Whichever show you choose to watch live, you will have a post show waiting for you.
There's a better than decent shot that they will finish their post show before we start ours.
Because NXT ends.
NXT will probably go till about 9:30, 10 at the latest. And
wow, yeah,
we will not be starting until at least midnight.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
So that's what a week.
Well, great. Awesome.
Also, I do have a rundown of today's Best of the Super Juniors results. A very good main event involving El Desperado and Ryusuke Taguchi. Taguchi had to do a serious match tonight, and when he has to do a serious match, he can totally do it. As well, Francesco Akira and Robbie X. Excellent matches on today's show. Another 10 matches are going down on Sunday, so you can keep up to date on all the standings. Ninja Mac is officially out. But he didn't go without a fight because he faced Clark Connors. He had to deal with Wheelson, and he combated the tire with legit ninja stars that he threw at Connors, and they were like embedded in the barricade. Like, these were legit ninja stars he was throwing at him.
Did he flat the tire?
No, he didn't get them into the tire. They were lodged into like the desk. But Ninja Mac lost, so he is eliminated. But I mean, the guy was a real winner in this Best of the Super Juniors.
A shout out to you, John Pollock, and also Jack Wanin for all the work on postwrestling.com with updates on everything from tonight as well TNA. And also wanted to give a shout out to Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson. Their review of Daphne's Dark Side of the Ring is up now for free, both on our YouTube and also on our free feed. So you can go and check that out as a sample of the type of coverage you get at the Post Wrestling Cafe.
That is up for free now. I really recommend this show. I thought Karen and Kate did such an excellent job of covering like a very heavy episode of Dark Side, but they did just such a fantastic job that we wanted everyone to have a chance to listen/watch that show. Last question. Are you watching any racing on Sunday?
Are you
kind of half in, half out?
No, I'm in. It's just this is the wrong weekend for it. You know, I tried to watch qualies because, you know, it's Monaco. Yeah. And with Monaco, the qualies are actually the most important day of the weekend. So I tried to watch that, and it's just there's way too much shit going on during the day.
Lando got pole position.
Spoiler alert, John. I was about to watch
it
after.
It's over. The race is in a few hours.
I saved it to watch after all. It's okay. I can't get mad at you.
Sorry.
It's fine. But anyway, I was going to say yes, but now I think I'm just going to skip the race altogether. But yeah, it's fine.
May I suggest the night the line was crossed?
What's that?
That's the ECW show we're reviewing next.
Oh, yes. I will watch that.
I feel legitimately bad right now. Well,
that's fine.
I'm off to see Lilo and Stitch tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You got a big day.
I do have a big day. I have to watch this movie. I think it's a live action movie. I don't think it's a cartoon.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, I was told I need to take, my daughter said, you are taking me to watch this movie. I said, okay, we will go on Sunday. So
that'll probably be the highlight of your day. I mean, I'm sure the pay-per-view will be great, but nothing will beat that.
I'll give everyone my rundown of the movie, but that's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Anything else, Way? Any final words?
No, nothing. I don't want to get anything else spoiled as the longer I talk to you. So, goodbye.
I was only kidding.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.